Hello and welcome to the Karate Priest Podcast. I'm your host, Father Daniel Duplantis. I'm a martial artist, musician, airman, and a priest of the Diocese of Houma Thibodeau. One of my other passions in life is teaching, especially teaching about the Catholic faith. Catholicism is a very deep faith. Jesus himself told Peter to put out into the deep for a catch. The most significant answers to life's most important questions often lie deep beneath the surface. Many people have questions about their faith. Through this podcast, my aim is to explore these questions and encounter incredible people along the way. Their stories show that God is constantly at work in our lives every single day, sometimes in the ordinary and sometimes in the extraordinary. Some of the topics treated in this podcast may be sensitive or controversial, but their discussion holds the key to truly living as God created us to live, which is to say that He created us to live in authentic freedom, loving Him above all else. Thank you for joining me on this journey of faith, and I hope you enjoy this podcast. Hello, and welcome back to the Karate Priest Podcast. So today we have a very special guest, and I'm super excited. I've been looking forward the last few days to interviewing her for several reasons, because when I found our guest for today, I realized that she is a super Catholic martial artist like myself. So figured she would be perfect for the podcast. And then on top of that, she is also our first international guest on the Karate Priest Podcast. I've been looking forward to this all week. So today joining me, we have Miss Jess Virgin from South Africa. Jess, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Father Dan. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Oh, this is fantastic. So, So the way that we got Jess on here was a few days ago on Amber's podcast. Most of you know Amber, the religious hippie. She's been on my podcast a few times, and I've been on hers. She was doing a Instagram live session, and I just kind of popped on impromptu. We kind of talked about a few things. Jess found me through that, and then and when I saw that, I was like, wait, she's a Catholic martial artist. Looked at some of her stuff. She's got some awesome ministries she's involved in, so I want to get her on and kind of share her story, her faith story, her martial arts story, to bring somebody new on the podcast. So, Jess, the first thing I want to ask you is, can you just tell us about your background? Tell us about life growing up and your faith.
Well, obviously, I'm in Cape Town, South Africa, so growing up, for faith-wise, my grandparents were actually a very big foundation of my Catholic faith. My grandfather was Catholic, and then my granny was, I think she was New Apostolic, and then she converted to Catholicism. I obviously, they were big in my faith journey. So obviously was baptized, first Holy Communion, first confession, confirmation. I did altar serving. I know that's quite a thing, but I did altar serving for 4 years and then I stopped. I really enjoyed it. It was like so a lot of discipline that happened while you're being on the altar and being in the presence of Jesus and everything. Just a few memories that come up. We have a lot of traditions in our family, or where my grandparents were here. I would go to Christmas Eve or midnight mass, and there's pictures of me like hugging the statue of Jesus and going sitting on. This is obviously after mass, because it's after mass. It's there's a statue in our church that is Mary holding Jesus as he's come down from the cross. So it's quite a big statue. So there's pictures of me hugging that. There's me going to the little nativity set and holding baby Jesus' hands with my two little tiny fingers. Me going to sit on the priest's chair. Like, the priests were very relaxed, obviously, whereas all the little kids getting to go up close to the nativity set and everything like that. My grandparents had a lot of religious images in their household. whenever I would go there. I mean, they stayed around the corner from us, so I would go there quite often. It was the Sacred Heart, Mary and Jesus. Above their bed, specifically, they had this. It was an heirloom now. Like I have the image now, but it's Mary holding Jesus with this giant rosary, wooden rosary, and it's from the Holy Land. So they went on pilgrimage to Holy Land. Like a very long time ago, and they brought it back, and now it's kind of like a heirloom that got passed down to me. It's just very, they were very active in the faith. My grandpa was a Eucharistic minister. My gran used to run care groups. She used to do soup kitchens. Like, they were very, very active, and everybody knew who they were. They were individuals that started a chapel down the road here from my house. They got statues and like set out the altar. Like, they were finding connections and everything. And my grandparents introduced me to the Carmelite sisters that are here based in Cape Town. And I got to meet the sisters for the first time, which is amazing. A lot of them are from the Philippines, but the whole experience with them was so amazing. And obviously they were very big on me doing karate and everything. So I would have to do a little karate trick here and there to show them.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I would have to sit in the kitchen area, and they would say, like, can you show us a trick? Can you do this? Can you do that? So I was like, okay. So I would have to stand in the small passage and show like a kata or like some karate movement. They'd be like, oh, that's so cool. And then they'll give you tea and biscuits and stuff. And I still go there today, and they still remember me, and which is very nice. My grandpa used to bring beads to them. So they could make rosaries, and they used to sell it and give it to people that didn't have rosaries and stuff, which was amazing, amazing. And then another funny story. So obviously my dad's also Catholic. So growing up, obviously in a very Catholic household and everything, my dad took his bus money and bought my granny a rosary on the way home from school. And he walked home, and when he got home, he got into a lot of trouble because he spent his bus money on a rosary for my gran. But my gran kept that rosary, and she prayed it and everything. And after my gran passed away, my grandpa gave it to me, and he was like, this is yours now. And now I keep it in my bedroom behind a photograph of the two of them. It's in a little velvet packet with the rosary in it. And my grandpa, who also passed away a few years ago, he wore a leather, almost like a leather chain with a crucifix on it, and he wore it until his very last. And I have that also in a little bag behind the photo of them. So yeah, they were the big foundation for my faith journey. And then during my growing up in the church and everything, I also was very badly catechized. I mean, I love all the ladies that gave me Sunday school. And when I started high school, which was 2014, they started instituting Life Teen. So we were like the guinea pig tryout for Life Teen in the church. And so I loved all the people that gave me Sunday school, but they didn't really catechize me very well. So I fell away from the church for about 4 years. So after my confirmation, it's like I fizzled out. I just didn't want to go anymore. I mean, if I went to church, it was like, it was one in a blue moon, like wasn't really interested in it. And I didn't really pay attention because I wasn't obviously understanding what was going on. And then 2020 comes, COVID happens, and now I'm like, I feel a call back. I don't know where it came from. It just came out of nowhere. I just felt a call back. And obviously I hadn't been to church in a while, and I just wanted to talk about Jesus. Like, I didn't care who it was with. I just wanted to talk about Jesus, and like, just, I was on fire in that sense. So then I joined a non-denominational church's youth group. It was online. No one could see each other. South Africa had very hard lockdowns during that stage. So everything was online. And I had these youth group sessions with them. And it just felt empty. Like it just didn't, it didn't fill that gap that I wanted. And obviously some of the Catholic traditions that I knew were true, that I was taught in Sunday school and catechism and stuff, I would bring up, and they would be like very reserved and stuff towards me. And I was like, okay, obviously made me feel uneasy. Then I popped one of the dads at church, at my church. I was like, sorry, do we have a young adults youth group? Because when after I got confirmed, there was nothing after confirmation. So after confirmation, there was nothing for me to carry on going to. After having so many years of going to every Sunday, it was catechism classes, it was going to mass afterwards, it was all that for so many years. And after confirmation, it's like everything just poof, it just disappeared. And then he replied back to me. He's like, yeah, actually 2019, they started a young adults group at the church. But I ran. I was like, really? And then I apologized, obviously, to the non-denoms. I was like, sorry, guys, this is not for me. I'm going to my church. They have a youth group there. I joined our youth group, Faithline. They call our church is Our Lady Help of Christians, Faithline. And joined them. And this is when I started my deep dive, so to say, in doing research of things that I was never taught. I mean, for example, I didn't know the difference between a mortal and a venial sin until 2-3 years ago. Like that is how badly I was catechized. Like I didn't know simple things like that, but I knew Jesus was fully present in the Eucharist and all those other things. But the small nitty gritty things were things that I wasn't told. And I don't know what it was, but yeah. And then I joined I first ran to confession after doing all my research from like Catholic Answers and Pints with Aquinas and Abiding Together podcast and Amber as well. I came across Amber a few times and I was like, she's teaching me a thing or two here. And a bunch of other podcasts and YouTube channels and stuff, I ran to confession. I was like, so Father, I haven't been here in a very long time. Can I just get everything cleared up, everything? So then that happened. And then joined our youth group. It was online. And then we started slowly going back into person a bit. And then everything just felt like home. Everything just came together so nicely. Also watching Father Mike Schmitz, his videos of, I think the two videos that I watched, and I cannot tell you how it literally blew my mind. I was like, I cannot believe I didn't know some of the things. I think the two videos, I think he did it at the SEEK conference. I think it's one of those things that's over there.
Yes. Yeah.
It was Pray the Mass Like Never Before and The Hour That Will Change Your Life. I watched those two videos. And Father, I cannot tell you, I went to Mass by myself. And I sat in the pew. And Father, our priest, our father, was doing the consecration communion. And I sat there and I was crying. I was like, I cannot believe I wasn't taught this. Like, I didn't realize that the whole entire Mass was a prayer. It was just, it blew my mind. And I sat and I cried, and I probably cried for the whole service. I just sat in the corner because I was sat in the front, but like in the corner, and I was like just crying. I was like, I can't believe this. Like, I've missed out. I can't believe that I haven't never clicked for me. And then more getting involved with our young adults group. So then I took over their social media page and I was making videos. So we have a core group that normally come up with session content ideas and everything. And then I'm just the guy that does the social media page. and then I like we're making videos like join our session, like that kind of things, like because we were still online for a while. And we had some people from the States. We had a guy from India join our session. It was so nice. And then we hopped on the reel trend, and I was like, guys, we must do like Saint Day reels, like the feast day of saints, and like record us saying a prayer and posting it. And I was just going crazy, going super, super crazy. And then I met these five amazing people through our young adults group. I'm obviously not going to mention their names because I don't know how they'll feel if I mention their names, but they know who they are. Four of them I met, and the one's in seminary at the moment. He's a brother. And we formed a WhatsApp group called the CIA, so Catholics in Action.
Yeah, I like that.
And obviously a lot of them, the one friend that I have, he was very clued up. Like, he would read the Vatican documents for fun. Like, he's that type of guy. He'll just read, like, the Summa Theologica, everything, just for fun. He's very clued up in that way. And then...
Don't get me wrong. I like to read the Summa sometimes with, like, a glass of wine or a glass of bourbon and just relax at night. It is pretty interesting reading, so I don't blame him.
I'll do that one day when I'm big. the language level for me, it's a bit too much, but I'll probably do it bite-size. The one, he's very clued up in that sense, in all different aspects. And the other ones in seminary, and then the other three are also very clued up. Like, they did their research, and they forced themselves to do research after they confirmed, and because they're also life team facilitators as well, so they need to know their stuff to help out with the young adults and everything. So we had a WhatsApp group, and every time I'd come across a video or a post on Instagram or something, I'd send it to them. I'm like, guys, what's your thoughts? can we have a discussion? And we would have so long, 16-minute voice notes for the, like, from all of us just having discussions about different topics, stuff. It was amazing. I will never ever regret forming that WhatsApp group, because we're all helping each other, just building each other up in our faith and everything. And yeah, that's basically the summarized of my faith journey.
That's incredible, you know, and I think back to 2 years ago, you know, when the pandemic was hitting and everything was locking down around the world. I was in my last semester of seminary, and, you know, to have to leave, and I went back home to my diocese and finished my last semester virtually. But I remember as a deacon at the time, I was preparing for priesthood ordination, just the people who came back to confession, you know, and it sounds like your story where, you know, I think we had people who, you know, I guess with this kind of almost imposing doom or impending doom of mortality because of disease, that people were like, I want to get right with God. And that was awesome, because I got to sit there while the priest was hearing confessions. I got to stand there in the line, and we did drive-through confessions. We had people who would come in their cars, and the priest was sitting on the back of a golf cart, and people would come in their cars and just roll down their window and do confession from their driver's seat. And that was so cool. And so, like, me as a deacon, my job was to direct the car line. And which was great, because people would get to see me first and ask, Father, like, I haven't done this in a long time. Can you help me? Or, Father, I'm a priest now, deacon, I haven't done this in a while. Can you help me? Like, how do I do this again? You know? And so that was awesome for me as a deacon. It sounds like your story, that COVID brought a lot of people back to the church. I think there were some people that, because of things going virtual, I think we're still trying to get some people back. I think we're closer now, you know, 2 years away from that, than we were maybe a year ago. But COVID itself had some blessings where it really did bring people back to the church. And then look at what it's done for you. You know, you started getting involved, you started looking for answers, and every single source you just named is great, great stuff. I use Catholic Answers all the time. Pints with Aquinas is a very popular podcast among my brother priests here in my diocese. That's what I think is so great, is to see people who they get on, they find some small bit of information, and it starts off with, why didn't I learn this? And then it becomes, well, what else can I learn? And that begins this whole, like, journey of discovery. So I think that's fantastic. And look what's made you do. You now have a young adult group. And in many cases, like, you know, you said you went to someone at your Catholic parish and asked, do we have one? For me as a priest, my response is would be like, if we didn't have one yet, I would say, well, why don't you start one? Yeah. Why don't you be the one to, you know, if this is something that you want, if you feel like you have a vision for what you want with this, Great, because as priests, I mean, I wish we could be involved in many more things than we currently are. But the reality is we're often busy with sacramental ministry and look, I'm the associate pastor at a cathedral. And so there's so many organizations here that, you know, it's hard to try to get very involved with each one. Or sometimes I feel like I have to pop in every now and then, but can't really be so hands-on. And so it's great when lay people like you have a vision of what you want to see with a particular ministry, and you can take it yourself and run off with it. That is every priest's blessing, to see if someone who can kind of take that and run. So that's great. Yeah. So let's talk about some martial arts now, because this is really what I'm interested to hear about too. Because again, it's great to hear so many faith stories, but I, you know, when I saw your stuff and saw that, oh my gosh, wait, she's a black belt in karate. So tell us about that. Yeah. Like, how did that start? How did it end up? Tell us about your background in martial arts.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I guess a good place to start is the beginning. So I didn't really have a choice to start karate. While my mom was pregnant with me, she tells me this to this day, whoever's in my stomach, boy or girl, she will do karate.
That's awesome.
So I didn't really have the choice, kind of. But
you
anyway.
Were consecrated from the womb to do karate.
Yeah, I think it's like my mom really liked Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee and The Karate Kid, like those movies. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was gifted 1 year a whole set of all the Bruce Lee movies and watched all of them. So that was the deciding process. And then obviously I came into the world, and my dad, who is also my sensei.
That's convenient.
Wow. Also very convenient.
Yeah.
So my dad did karate in his teens, and then he got into brown belt, and then he had to stop because he had to go to the army. And then after that, he didn't go back until 2007, and he started all over again from white belt.
Wow, they didn't start over, because brown belt's pretty high up there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he was a third Q brown belt, either third Q or first Q brown belt.
Wow. Yeah.
So he was like almost there, and then unfortunately he had to. Yeah.
Let me pause for a second there for our listeners. So in both Japanese and Korean arts, the color belts, the higher the number, the lower the rank is. And so for us, I think in Taekwondo, we start at like 10th Q or 10th Goop is what we'll call it. In Japanese arts, they'll call it Q, KYU. And so what happens is, as you get higher in rank, the number gets lower. So the highest Q rank in Japanese martial arts is first Q. And then from there, once you hit your black belt ranks, the higher the number of black belt rank, the higher the rank. So first dan, second dan's higher than first, third dan higher than second, so on and so forth. So.
Yeah. So then obviously my dad had that background. And then when I was 3 years old, my dad had one of his old gis in the garage. And three-year-old me put his gi on with his old belt. I think there's a photo of it. Is me putting his gi on with the old belt and him putting his old gi on with his brown belt. And there's a photo of us standing in our passageway, standing in this oversized gi on me. And then when I was five, I started karate. So I started quite young. So this is now 17 years later. And I started doing Kyokushin first. And then the dojo was a bit too far for me to travel to. So then I moved to Shukukai. Kimura Shukukai karate, and it's also the style that my dad did when he was a teen. So I think I did Kyokushin for about a year, and then I graded to purple belt for Kyokushin, because they go white, purple, they have a weird color sequence. And then when I was six, I went to Shukukai, and when we walked in the door, the world chief instructors, we have four world chief instructors, three world chief instructors. So there's one in America, one in South Africa North, which is Joburg area, and then one in South Africa and South. And then we had one in Europe, in Great Britain as well, but unfortunately he passed away a few years ago. So we walked into the dojo, and after 30 years, our Shion, a world chief instructor, looks and turns to my dad and says, "Robbie, is that you?"
Oh my God.
My dad was like, wow, he still remembers me after so long. And then Shion obviously looked at, obviously greeted my dad and looked at me. And my dad said, "No, my daughter's going to start at the dojo here." And he looked at me, grabs my hand. You know how senseis can be, they grab your hand, they look at you in the eyes, and they're like, "You're going to be such a world champion one day."
That's always encouraging.
So good, yeah. One day. And then I was like, okay. So then, yeah, that's where my journey started at Samurai, or my dojo is called Samurai. And started off there. I went through all my grades. I went to my first national tournament when I was 9 years old. Competed there. And then I went to my first international tournament when I was 11. I was the youngest competitor at that time. So 2012 was my first world tournament. Funnily enough, it was in the United States.
Oh, okay. Where? So, in the United States?
We spent 3 days in New York.
Okay.
And then we took a bus drive to Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Okay, yeah.
And then I think it's the Trump Taj Mahal. It's like a hotel there.
Yeah.
We competed in one of the arenas in there.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah. So that was my first world tournament, and obviously my first time flying overseas. Well, I mean, 17 hours of flying for me as an 11-year-old was extremely, extremely fun.
Oh, my.
And then after the world tournament, I came back, and then that year, when we came back, I graded to my junior black belt. So I think it's the same for Taekwondo. You go juniors and then you go to senior blacks.
Right. Yeah. So for us, we have first Q for us would be a red belt with either a black tip or a black stripe straight down the middle. And then what we call a PUM belt is basically like a junior black belt. And so you'd have a PUM black belt up until you turn, I think it's 15, and then a 15 that turns into a Dan rank.
Yeah. So it's the same with us. I think it's when we turn, it's 12, you get your first Dan, junior black, second Dan, or however long the sensei would like to keep you on junior black for before you, I think it's only when you become an adult, then you can grade your senior Dan.
Right.
And so on my 12th birthday, I graded to my junior black. So when the grading finished, I was officially 12 years old, and everyone had cake and stuff afterwards. And I got my junior black belt. And then a year or two later, I graded to my second Dan junior black. And then from like the age of 9 until like now, I assisted with like the baby classes, so like the 4 and 5 year olds, and teaching them how to punch a kick. I love it. I think it's so funny. You get the odd kid here and there that is just absolutely hilarious, and they joke around all the whole class. And I'm like, "You must look here, like focus here."
At that age, the big thing is, because I do the same thing. I help teach the little ones, and their attention span is often what we're having just to work on first and foremost. Yeah.
Yeah. The attention span is very, very short, but I love it. And then you make them run, and then they love it. And then you play, we have this game where it's called Dojo Ball, and they have all bumblebee, and they have the big, like those big yoga balls, and we throw them around. It's almost like dodgeball, but we just call it something fun for them to be like, "Can we play this game? Can we play games?" Because they always want to play games at the end. So yeah, we play those fun games with them. And then so I assisted with classes for a while. And then 2014, I went to my second world tournament in Sun City in Joburg area. And then 2016, so we have a world tournament every 4 years. 2016 was my third and the last world tournament I've been to, which was in Germany. And something just a little special that happened during that time. And it also relates to my grandparents and how good God has been to me. I competed in Germany and I made it to the finals. And I did my final round, and unfortunately I lost to Sweden and I came second. So everyone, my mom's crying, I'm crying. I mean, it was hard work getting up to there with all the squad training sessions and all the other types of training sessions that go with doing karate. I'll get into that, but not all. But all that hard work and all that time and everything. And then on the plane, so obviously it took all, like I took my trophy and my medal and everyone started packing up and we're leaving and we got on the plane and my mom said to me, she's like, Jess, I didn't want to tell you this while you were competing, but your grandpa has been in hospital the whole time. So obviously I'm distraught now. It's like, I just want to get home because obviously my grandparents were at that. My grandpa was my last grandparent on my dad's side because my granny passed away when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And both of them played a very big role in my faith journey. And now I just want to get home. So we came back to South Africa, literally threw my bags down. I was like, I need to go see grandpa. And I took my medal with and my trophy with to show him. And we went to the hospital. He was in the ward area. And we went visiting hours and I went in and I was like, oh, grandpa, like, it's my medal and stuff. So he got to hold my medal and look at my trophy. And he told me he's so proud of me and that he loves me so much and everything. So we sat with him for the visiting hours and then we left. And I think it was a day or two later, my uncle and aunties went to the ward and into visiting hours. And he just didn't wake up. He slept through the whole visiting hours. So he didn't speak to anybody really. And unfortunately, after the visiting hours, or it was just before the second lot of visiting hours, he passed. And I was the last person that my grandpa spoke to before God took him. And I'm like, it was like literally a day or two later, I can't remember, but like I was so happy that God just kept him until I came back.
Yeah.
Just so that I could just have that last hug and that last kiss and just that last embrace with him and everything. And yeah, just so special that he was the last person that my parents and I were the last person that he saw before Jesus decided to take him. And yeah, this is a little story, but it was a very big impact on me. And I, when I was competing without even knowing it, I was like, I'm doing this for grandpa. Before I even got on the plane, before my mom even told me anything, just something inside me was like, do this for grandpa, don't do it for yourself. And either way, he still told me that he loved me and he was proud of me and everything. So yeah. And then on a little lighter note, then 2019 came and I had my senior black belt grading. Now, senior black belt gradings is a flip of a coin. They can range from 5 hours to 4 hours or longer. Normally they're 5 hours long, depending on the mood of the senseis. And my grading was 6.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
And it's in the middle of summer, or the start of summer. So you just hope that it's not hot the day you grade, because the geese can get so sticky on you and everything. So the grading starts, I'm feeling good because obviously I trained for it, fitness. I was not only doing karate, but I was doing boxing and kickboxing as well, just to complement for fitness and everything. And get to the grading, 6.5 hours. My dad's also on the panel. So my dad's a fourth Dan. black belt. So he's on the panel, he's watching me the whole time. And then occasionally he's like, Jess, yeah. He'll whisper, he's like, Jess, yeah, take. He gives me like it's a wine gum. It's like a droop droop kind of sweet.
Okay.
Just to give me like energy. He's like, here's a sweet. Just take it. And you quickly take it in your mouth while no one's looking, you just carry on with your grading. Just to make sure your energy doesn't deplete. And so we're going on with the grading. And let me just add further. We only had, in that total of 6.5 hours, a 2-minute water break.
Whoa. Okay.
So it was non-go the whole time. Then it came to the end of the grading. And now the chief instructor, he's standing in front. And for each row, because we obviously line up in grade order. And for each row, he's choosing a student of the grading, like for each grade. So he came to my row and he chose me. Obviously, I'm shocked. My dad's looking at me and you can see he's starting to get a bit teary. And then and they carried on going. And I was the only girl that, I mean, there were other women there, but I was the only girl that my chief instructor chose. And I was like, I felt like everything that I worked for was just, everything just came together so nicely. And then they called out your name one by one to say whether or not you got your grade or not. And then the Shiam called my name out and he turned to me and he was like, Jace Virgin, senior Shodan, which means obviously first Dan Black. And we bowed to him and everyone's like, Os, because we say Os instead of like other screaming. We just normally, Os is like a, it's kind of just like a spirit thing that we do, just like it's motivating when you're training and you're getting tired and someone screams awesome and then everyone else screams off. It's just like an uplifting thing. Like we're all in this together kind of thing and for celebrating and everything. So everyone claps. And then I turned and I looked at my dad and my dad was looking at me and he's starting to tearing and I'm starting to tear. I was like, no, I'm not crying. I'll cry afterwards. And then obviously the types of training sessions that we do. So we do gashkus. I don't know if you guys also do those if they do that in Taekwondo as well. We do gashkus, which is kind
you
of
have to give me, you have to tell me like what that means. And I can tell you.
I'll explain now.
I can tell you what the Korean equivalent is.
Okay. It's kind of like a training camp. So you normally go away somewhere and you do like training for like a certain period of time. And then come back afterwards. So it's also kind of like a bonding experience for us. Like it becomes more of like a family. Karate just gels so nice and becomes a family. So for example, there's a place like up north of it, it's called Wellington. And we normally go there for gashkus, for training camps. But we'll have a braai, which what you guys would call barbecue.
Oh yeah, okay.
So we'll have a braai, or we will have early morning training sessions, come back, have lunch together, go out, do obstacle courses, come back, have a braai. Sometimes we put skits on, like they will be like, okay, you guys need to put a skit on about this person, and you put like, so you kind of, it gives that kind of humor and the bonding experience. Sometimes we go hiking, so we go hike up the mountains. And I mean, if you haven't seen Cape Town, it's a mountain everywhere and sea everywhere. So there's a lot of hiking that gets done. There's a lot of beach training sessions that get done, and the sand father munches your legs. It munches your legs. And then we also do a lot of, and then we also have like squad training sessions, like as a whole South African team, preparing for tournaments, like world tournaments and stuff like that, and just to build a community. And like we do cheers at the events, and then all the other countries try and copy our cheers, but they just can't get it as nicely. I also did a bit of refereeing, so I could also referee some fighting or kata, and our competitions are normally kata and kumite. Mm-hmm. So kata is that more what people call of like a dance.
Right. Yeah, we do the same thing.
Where you just everyone's like you're fighting nobody, but at the same
the patterns, the forms. Yeah.
Yeah. And then kumite, which is the fighting part, and then we also have unison kata, which is where three people do kata in a formation, and then obviously in sync, and then team kumite, where you have a team versus another team, and whoever wins the most rounds wins, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my martial arts journey and how it's still going.
That's awesome. I love it. Yeah, there's so many parallels between that and taekwondo, because, you know, like you said, like with kumite and kata, we have equivalents in taekwondo, where for us, we call, depending on what type of taekwondo you do, so I do the kukiwon style. So we call our forms, we call them pumse, would be the equivalent for kata. And then for kumite, we call it kirugi. Sparring. So with that, let's go ahead and that's a lot of stuff for today. Let's go ahead and do like a little rapid fire. I just kind of want to get some quick answers from you. And I got a couple little things here, but we're gonna do some little rapid fire. So first thing I want to hear is, who's your favorite saint?
Well, I obviously have to go for my confirmation saint, because I mean, she chose me.
Yeah.
So my confirmation saint is Saint Teresa of Calcutta, Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
She was canonized 9 months before I was confirmed, so which fits in really nicely. And my granny, as I said, she was we called her our Mother Teresa, because she was so giving and she just wanted to give, and she had a scrapbook just of newspaper clippings of Mother Teresa and stuff. So she was also a big role of how my love came for Mother Teresa, and then the fact that she was a saint 9 months before I confirmed, I was like, it was perfect. Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Next thing is, what is your favorite scripture, whether it be a particular book or a particular verse? What's your favorite scripture?
I don't think I have one.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I have one. I mean, there's so many good things in that big book. In the Bible, there's so many good things. But I think my favorite story is of Jesus with the is it the Samaritan woman?
Yeah, the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the woman at the well. Yeah, that's probably my favorite story.
Excellent. All right, favorite feast day.
Feast day. Cliche, but Christmas, and then obviously Good Friday to Easter. I think it's just because we had a lot of traditions. So for Christmas, my grandpa used to dress up as Santa Claus.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
We used to have these things at church called Candles by Candlelight, and we would sing Christmas carols, and my grandpa would dress up as Santa, and I would dress up as an angel. I used to hand out sweets to everybody.
Okay.
And
cool.
Then
yeah.
For Easter and Good Friday, just the whole part of Holy, the weekend, my granny used to take me for Stations of the Cross. And on Good Friday, we would normally sit and watch Jesus of Nazareth, the Passion of Christ, and have pickled fish and have hot cross buns.
Yep. And today, the day that this episode is airing is Good Friday itself.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's so cool.
All right. So I'm a huge coffee drinker, and Amber is as well. And so this is a question I always like to ask my guests. What's your favorite coffee?
Well, here's a plot twist for you, Father. I don't like coffee.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what's your drink of choice then?
I'm a tea person.
Okay.
I'm a tea person. Yeah.
Awesome.
Specifically, and I know you... like Ceylon tea, and in South Africa, we have rooibos tea.
Must be an American thing to drink a lot of coffee. So cool though. That's cool. So, and then my last little rapid fire question is, you said you watched all kind of karate movies growing up. And who is your favorite character from either the Karate Kid or the Cobra Kai series?
Ooh.
Yeah, I wanted to hear this one. Who's your favorite character?
I love
Cobra Kai. Or from each one. Yeah.
I love Cobra Kai. I've watched all of the episodes so far. From Karate Kid, I have to say Mr. Miyagi.
Yes.
Why? How can I not say Mr. Miyagi? And then I would think from Cobra Kai. I can't think of her name now, but it's Daniel LaRusso's daughter.
Oh, Samantha.
Samantha, yes. Yeah. I think it's just because I resonate with her so much.
Yeah.
I think, those would be my two.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, that's going to kind of wrap it up for us today. Jess, can you tell our listeners how they can find you with your ministry, with your social media? You want to tell us all of your handles, your usernames, any of that information?
Okay. Well, yeah, my Instagram is just Jess Virgin. And then our church's young adults group is it's OLHC underscore Faithline. You can also get it. It's in my Instagram bio as well. But yeah, those are the only two social media handles that I have.
Fantastic. Well, Jess, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very good. And with that, we will see our listeners in 2 weeks.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of The Karate Priest. If you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and like The Karate Priest on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're ever in South Louisiana, come visit me at the Cathedral of St. Francis de Sales in Houma. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can also email me at thekaratepriest@gmail.com. Your questions are welcomed and may be used in future episodes. May the blessing of Almighty God, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit come down on you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for the International Association of Metatomics at metatomics.org or find us on social media for other unique content.